For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to the Barbell Medicine Podcast, where we bring modern medicine to strength and conditioning and strength and conditioning to modern medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Jordan Feigenbaum, and this is our March 2025 mystery case. I can't tell you what it is, but it is a medical mystery case. And on the other end of the line, we have the second most handsome doctor in North America, Dr. Austin Baracchi. What's going on, man?
Hey, doing okay. Out here in El Paso, where Texas is getting whipped by a lot of winds and dust storms. So I felt like I was driving home in the middle of Mad Max yesterday. We don't get tornadoes as far as I'm aware, but horrible dust storms. And I could see maybe 100 feet in front of my car when I was driving home just because of dust and dirt and stuff. It's pretty wild. But anyway.
So yeah, if Mad Max 3 becomes a thing, you have practical experience there. You could be a subject matter expert on.
Yeah, I could drive the war rig.
Yeah, there you go. If this is your first time joining us for a medical mystery case, what this is a real scientific case that's been reported in the academic literature. And ideally, Austin does not know this case, is not familiar with it. And I present to him some of the details of the case, and he kind of takes us on a little journey through his doctor brain and hopefully arrives at the correct diagnosis. Now, part of this is me predicting whether or not he's going to get the correct diagnosis. You're going to get it. I'm 99% confident that you're going to get it, but I think you'll have no idea until the very end.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. Before we get into the podcast, a few announcements. We have a live in-person pain and rehab seminar, May 17th through 18th in Buffalo, New York. It is approved for CEUs for physical therapists. Also, people have used it for continuing education for their personal training or strength coaching certifications, as well as athletic training and a few others, I believe. So those are selling fairly quickly. So if you're interested in joining our pain and rehab team for that live in-person seminar, check out the link in the description below. We also just released our new second generation Strength 2 and Strength 3 templates. So this combines our powerlifting and strength lifting programs. If you don't know what strength lifting is, it's instead of the squat, bench press, and deadlift, it's the squat, overhead press, and deadlift. And so each of these templates now includes four total programs. You have 3 and 4 day options, some pretty cool stuff. I'm really proud of these new programs. So you can check those out, and you can also get a free 1 week sample if you're on the fence about these and you're in the market for a new program. Also, March is Nutrition Month, and so we are running a special on all of our supplements. You can use code NUTRITION20 at checkout, get 20% off. And we have new articles on the website on heart rate variability and resistance training, and also training with limited time. Now, I already predicted what you're going to get, that you're going to get the right answer to this case. Do you feel confident? Are you ready for this?
I trust in your confidence here, so let's do it.
You're confident in my confidence. All right, that's very meta of you. Let's do this. Okay. 28-year-old female presents to the emergency department with severe abdominal pain for 2 hours. 2 hours ago, the patient was doing sit-ups when she felt pain all of a sudden. She was unable to continue her workout, and she went home. She describes the pain as 9 out of 10, it is widespread, and she feels like it's under the belly button. She has not had an episode like this before. This morning, she was able to eat her normal breakfast. That was about 6 hours ago. And since then, she denies any nausea, any vomiting, diarrhea, blood in the stool, pain, or increased frequency of urination. She also denies any trauma. She has normal menstrual periods. Her last menstrual period was 20 days before. And her past medical history is significant for acne, which she was taking Accutane up until about 2 months ago when her acne had resolved, and thus she's no longer taking this medication. She has no other active medical problems to her knowledge, no past surgical history. This is the point of the podcast where you can pause it and play along at home, try to summarize the patient, maybe come up with your own differential diagnosis, which is a fancy way of saying, hey, what do we think is going on with this patient? But now I'll turn it over to you, Dr. Baracchi. What's up with this patient?
Awesome. This is a great first set of information, I will say, and mainly because the differential diagnosis of abdominal pain in a young woman is massive. So just, you know, since we use this for some teaching and some edutainment, I will set aside the specific circumstances prior to her arrival and just describe how we would think about abdominal pain in general. And then in particular, she has acute abdominal pain, meaning with sudden onset, not that it's been going on for a very long time. And so, you know, we have, I know, a fair amount of medical trainees in the audience and students and such. And so they'll be familiar with a traditional kind of anatomic approach to teaching, you know, abdominal pain. We divide the abdomen into various compartments or quadrants, and we look at what organs are in each general area. So in the right upper quadrant or the left upper quadrant, right lower quadrant, et cetera, of the abdomen. And we think about what kind of diseases and processes and problems can go on in each of those areas. That's an okay way to start learning about abdominal pain. I think, unfortunately, the body is not so neat and tidy as to keep pain very localized to one area or the other. And so it's not unusual for somebody to have pain in the middle of the abdomen that actually is coming from the appendix in the right lower side, or pain in the upper abdomen that's coming from, you know, the left or the right, you know, an organ on the left or the right. But that's the traditional kind of teaching. Beyond the abdominal cavity, we also think about, can people have abdominal pain from things going on in the lower chest, for example, having right upper quadrant pain from something going on at the bottom part of the right lung, or something going on in the heart that feels like it's kind of in the epigastric area of the upper abdomen. And then we also think about not just areas above the abdomen, but also below. So things in the pelvis. And in particular, in a young woman, we think about the gynecological organs, something with the ovaries, with the uterus, the tubes, urinary tract, et cetera, can all manifest in the lower abdomen. And then outside of all of that is the surface, meaning the abdominal wall itself, the musculature of the abdominal wall, and skin that can cause pain. For example, if somebody has shingles manifesting on the surface. So that's kind of the big picture approach to abdominal pain in general. I think when somebody's coming in like this with severe acute abdominal pain, our job is to make sure there's not an immediate emergency going on. And there are only a couple emergencies that we think about. So does somebody have some kind of vascular emergency? So like a blood clot in one of the vessels that feeds their intestines, leading to gut ischemia or abdominal aortic aneurysm, being a couple examples of vascular emergencies. Or could they have an obstruction of their intestines or some other kind of hollow structure in the gut, because those things can suddenly obstruct and lead to a lot of symptoms? And finally, can something perforate or rupture in the abdomen? Those are all things that can manifest relatively suddenly. The additional diagnosis to consider here is an ectopic pregnancy that can potentially rupture and lead to a lot of pain in a patient like this. So that's how I think about abdominal pain in general. And then the first things I think about with acute abdominal pain, at least within the abdomen, we'd also be thinking about the heart and the pelvis, as I mentioned. Now, when I think a little bit more detail about her story, where she says she ate normally 6 hours ago, no nausea, no vomiting, no diarrhea, no changes in her stool or urination, those are a bit helpful. Those don't definitively exclude anything here. But if she did have any of those symptoms, it might clue me in a little bit more to the gastrointestinal tract or the urologic tract or something like that. But I think that those are a little bit less likely here. She does have this last menstrual period 20 days ago, so pregnancy is essentially always a possibility and would need to be ruled out. And then the other past medical history you gave me was that she had acne and was on Accutane. She is no longer on it. The only relevant consideration there is that drug can, in rare cases, cause pancreatitis. So that would be something I'd be thinking about here. Now, the specific circumstances that brought her in, it sounds like she had this onset of severe diffuse abdominal pain. She described it as being under the belly button that happened in the setting of doing sit-ups. And so we have to kind of simultaneously entertain, is this related to the sit-ups, or is this just purely coincidental and not related to the sit-ups? In these admittedly exercise-biased cases that we do here, it may well be a little bit more related to the sit-ups, in which case, what are the things that I would be thinking about? Well, one is related to the actual musculature. So was there some sort of muscular complication in the abdominal wall leading to this abdominal pain? One example can be that you can get an abdominal wall, or sometimes known as a rectus sheath hematoma, meaning that you're kind of pop a little bit of bleeding into the abdominal wall. There are a few other kind of more niche, rare kind of things that can happen. So sometimes patients, particularly, you know, younger patients, she's not super, super young, like a teenager that would make me think more about this kind of thing, but 28, still pretty young. Patients can have certain congenital things going on in their abdomen, for example, relating to like prior remnants of the umbilical cord and things like that, that can then lead to complications that present in a much delayed fashion, particularly when there are changes in like abdominal pressure and things like that. So basically, to summarize how I would be thinking about this patient, the first thing I'd be thinking about, my standard emergencies of acute abdominal pain. Make sure there's no vascular emergency or perforation or obstruction or something like that. Get a pregnancy test. do an exam. And then I'd be thinking of trying to isolate on exam if I can. There are some maneuvers that you can do to see, is this something more localized in the abdominal wall, or does it seem more intra-abdominal within the abdomen? That's not always something you can definitively determine, but if you have a leaning that it might be more inside the abdomen, by and large, the vast majority of these patients are going to end up needing some kind of imaging, cross-sectional imaging, like a CT scan or something like that, to get to a much more confident localized diagnosis. So it'd be helpful to get some vital signs and then some of that information next, I think.
Yeah, I think, abdominal pain as the, chief complaint, if you're a medical student or a healthcare professional or whatever. I mean, yeah, again, the differential diagnosis is potentially endless almost, whether something's going on in the abdomen or it's referred or whatever. Yeah. But to your point, ruling out anything that is emergent, perforation, a bleed, something else that could, quickly, result in somebody crumping. You got to diagnose it. So that's probably have already been done by the time you get called on this patient. But let's just say that you're working in the ED for whatever reason, you decided to be a cowboy and you're in the emergency department. So you see this patient, you go and get some vital signs. They are reassuring. Her blood pressure is 100 over 80. Her heart rate is 90. Respiratory rate is 10. And she's satting well on room air, so it doesn't need any oxygen. She's also afebrile. She looks well but uncomfortable. And so you perform a focused abdominal exam. She has no bruises, no scars, or skin lesions on gross inspection. You listen to her bowel sounds with your stethoscope. They sound normal in all four quadrants. She has bilateral tenderness to palpations when you touch her on either side of the umbilicus. That's a fancy word for the belly button. So she's tender to touch both sides of the umbilicus. No masses are felt, and she has no rebound tenderness. And if you don't know what rebound tenderness is, you're listening to this just for edutainment. That's basically you push and you see if there's pain when the abdominal cavity kind of rebounds to its normal sort of position. Sometimes it can be indicative of peritonitis, which is inflammation of the peritoneal cavity, which is basically a space where your abdominal organs are kept. So that can be due to an infection, can be due to something ruptured, blood there, irritative sort of stuff touching that cavity. It's not a great sign, but if you find it, you're like, oh, your worry level goes up pretty significantly. Her gyne exam was normal. You called OB. You actually called your wife. She came in. She did the gyne exam.
Great.
Yeah. And that is normal. Her physical exam is otherwise unremarkable. So before I give you some labs and some other tests, any sort of changes, and if you're playing along at home, this is where you would pause and kind of maybe refine your differential diagnosis in summarizing this patient. Does that help you at all, Austin?
Unfortunately, it mostly doesn't. So the vital signs you gave me, a blood pressure of 100 over 80, that is something that can well be normal in a healthy young patient like this. Now, if I see 100 over 80 in like one of my standard kind of 60, 70, 80-year-old folks with high blood pressure who takes a bunch of blood pressure medicines to keep things under control, and then I interpret that much differently. She also does not have significant tachycardia. So tachycardia or rapid heart rate is another sign of ominousness. But at the same time, in young, healthy patients, they can look okay for a long time until they don't. So those things are mildly reassuring, but still not awesome. Same with the normal respiratory rate. When people's breathing rate picks up, that's a major sign of badness. Fortunately, we don't see that here. So this is at least telling me that I have some time to get to the bottom of this, that it's not an immediate emergency, like within the next 10 minutes, I need to figure this out. The exam is mostly reassuring. You found some tenderness on either side of the belly button, so essentially right in the middle of the abdomen, which is unfortunately like the least useful place to find tenderness or pain. So when I described kind of the quadrants earlier, if I find pain that's very obviously localized to the right upper quadrant or to the left upper quadrant, it's like just there, then I do tend to bias my search a little bit in that direction. When somebody has pain that's just in the middle of the abdomen and it is relatively diffuse, or it kind of goes all over the way she described, that doesn't really help me narrow down very much at all. It can still be coming from any of those different organs in any of those quadrants, and it may just be kind of an early pain before it kind of localizes due to potentially inflammation in that area a little bit more. So classically, for example, appendicitis pain might be in the middle and kind of vague before the appendix gets so inflamed and the tip of it kind of touches your peritoneal surface, and then people tend to localize it a lot better. So overall, my list of diagnoses is not modified a ton outside of just you know, in general, in a 28-year-old woman, the list of those emergencies that I mentioned earlier, like a vascular emergency, was already not terribly likely, but it's just something we'd be thinking about regardless. So I think that at this point, my differential diagnosis remains mostly unchanged. I'm still not exactly clear on whether this is an abdominal wall problem or an intra-abdominal problem. I do think it's less likely to be something going on in the chest or something going on down in the pelvis. So I suppose those have moved down a little bit. But now my question is, or the way I'm thinking about this is there something going on in the abdominal wall, like I mentioned, a rectus sheath hematoma, or again, some sort of congenital anomaly. I think they're like urachal things. This is like throwback to stuff that vaguely remember from a long time ago, but I remember I've seen some complications of these things. I've seen, you know, thrombosis of like, you know, people's old umbilical vessels that kind of recanalize as adults and you get a clot in it and that causes pain. So I've seen some of this kind of weird esoteric stuff that I'm kind of considering as a distant possibility here, but still, among all comers, you know, patients coming into the emergency department with acute abdominal pain, you know, the more often it's going to be something intra-abdominal that you're more likely to end up needing some form of cross-sectional imaging to get to the bottom of more definitively.
Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. They say that money can't buy you happiness, and while that might be true, money sure can make you feel a lot of other things, like stressed, guilty, and overwhelmed. I've definitely been there before, and it's like when you're not in control of your money is in control of you. Acorns is a financial wellness app that helps you take control of your money with simple tools that make it easy to start saving and investing in your future. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that fits you and your money goals. You also don't need to be rich. You don't need a ton of time. Acorns lets you invest with spare money you've got right now, as little as $5, and start investing in just 5 minutes. Basically, Acorns does the hard part so that you can give your money a chance to grow. Financial stress can certainly play a big role in health, and Acorns gives you small, simple steps to get you and your financial wellness on track. Are you ready to take control of your money? Sign up now and join the over 13 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $22 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/BBM or download the Acorns app today to get started. This is a paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/BBM. This podcast is brought to you by Rosetta Stone. We're almost 2 months into 2025, which probably means that you're reflecting on your New Year's resolutions. Whether you're traveling, advancing your career, or just love learning, speaking a new language in 2025 is a great goal, and Rosetta Stone makes it easier than ever. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program for 30 years. With millions of users and 25 languages offered, it's also one of the best. It's available on desktop or as an app, so you can learn anytime, anywhere, and it uses an immersive experience to help you learn the language of your choice quickly, along with the correct accent using its true accent speech recognition technology. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. Additionally, Rosetta Stone is offering 50% off a lifetime membership, which is an incredible deal. Don't wait, you can unlock your language learning potential now. Barbell Medicine listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning now. This podcast is sponsored by Factor. While we all know that nutrition is huge when it comes to health and performance, we don't always have time to shop for and prepare healthy meals. If you're ready to supercharge your nutrition this year, let Factor help you take the stress out of eating healthy so that you can hit your goals. With Factor, you can skip the grocery stores, the prep work, and the cooking fatigue, and instead get fresh, chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals delivered right to your door. Factor lets you choose from a ton of different meal plans, and it always arrives fresh and fully prepared, perfect for any active, busy lifestyle. When things get hectic, Factor is flexible. You can change your order up every week with plans from 4 to 18 meals per week, or pause and reschedule your deliveries at any time. And check this out, Factor is cheaper than takeout and dining out. Reach your goals this year with ingredients you can trust and convenience that can't be beat. Eat smart with Factor. Get started at factormeals.com/factorpodcast and use code FACTORPODCAST to get 50% off your first box plus free shipping. That's code FACTORPODCAST at factormeals.com/factorpodcast to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. This podcast is sponsored by Wonderful Pistachios. Now, I've been a Wonderful Pistachios customer for a long time prior to them coming on board, as I'll typically use their no-shells honey-roasted pistachios in my morning oatmeal, and then have some no-shells sea salt and vinegar as a healthy fat source for a meal or snack in the evening. Wonderful Pistachios come in a number of other flavors, as well as different sizes for taking with you on the go, and they also have unsalted versions, which holds the sodium but not any of the flavor. Wonderful Pistachios is a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids. Like other nuts, pistachios are known for their protein power, their fiber content, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you feeling fuller longer. Whether you're running between meetings, dropping off the kids, or need something on the way to the gym, Wonderful Pistachios are the snack that works as hard as you do. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about this healthy, tasty snack.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's give you some labs. If you're pausing and playing along at home, welcome back. We're going to give you some labs and some other tests. Unfortunately, I don't think these are going to be too helpful, but yeah, you might feel differently. So her CBC, this is a complete blood count, measuring like red blood cells, platelets, et cetera. All, that's normal. Comprehensive metabolic panel, her chemistry, all normal. Her urinalysis, also normal. Coagulation tests, normal. And she has a negative pregnancy screen. So before I move on to some imaging, because you knew that was going to happen, I mean, you roll in with abdominal pain, it's highly unlikely that you're going to walk away with no imaging. Does that help or steer you in any particular direction that she has stone cold normal labs and is not pregnant?
Not too surprising. I mean, I think that shy of a surprise pregnancy, and then the only other test that would often get checked in this situation kind of on a routine basis is a lipase measurement for the pancreas. Outside of those things potentially being abnormal, the rest I would have predicted was going to be normal.
Let's just say that if she had a lipase drawn, and she may have because there's word limits on these case reports, it would have been it would have been normal.
Yeah, of course. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So basically we have a otherwise, besides this abdominal pain that hurts when you push on either side of the belly button, stone cold normal exam, labs, et cetera, kind of you're like, what's going on? Is this, you know, you start wondering like, well, where, what could possibly be causing this? So if you, in that situation, like what
are still not exact. Yeah. So this is, you know, a decision that that ER doctors have to make a lot more often of whether they feel that the presentation is something that is benign enough that they are willing to kind of observe and let the patient go home, give them some symptomatic treatment for some, like, you know, made up hypothetical diagnosis of maybe a little bit of gastroenteritis or something. But I think that's a little bit tougher to say here because we have mostly reassuring findings on exam except for the tenderness, but her labs are all normal. So if she had like a really elevated white blood cell count, for example, or if her liver associated enzymes were very elevated, those would all be kind of localizing signals that would make us search a little bit further. That all of those labs and you know, markers of inflammation and things like that are pretty reassuring. You could question, well, is this just kind of some nonspecific abdominal pain that we can let go, maybe give them some laxatives in case they're constipated or something like that? I'm not feeling like that is a great strategy here, mainly because of the acuity, how quickly it onset. She was previously fine. It hit all of a sudden. It's pretty severe, seemingly. Now, again, we still don't have great evidence to suggest that this is some raging inflammatory problem going on in the abdomen. But at the same time, it can take a little bit of time for the inflammatory response to really get revved up. So we might be catching things, you know, a little bit earlier. I've seen cases, for example, before where, you know, patients might have gallstone pancreatitis, for example, and the initial lipase was actually not that elevated. And it takes a little bit of time for that to come up. So this is a situation where we're in a tricky spot with a patient who's previously healthy, who has generally reassuring vitals, a mostly reassuring exam, completely reassuring labs, and yet there's still enough of a possibility that something could be going on abruptly or acutely that I don't feel entirely safe about letting this patient go with a little bit more evaluation. And in most kind of well-resourced centers, I think a patient like this would get a contrasted CT of their abdomen and pelvis, particularly since their pregnancy test has been negative.
Yeah, well, you're kind of right. They did get some imaging, but no CT. This was actually an abdominal ultrasound. And you know what? Since you're skilled with the ultrasound, you did this yourself. On abdominal ultrasound, the patient had a normal appearing appendix, ovary, bladder, and vagina. However, there were two darker or hypoechoic regions seen on both rectus muscles, about 13 millimeters deep from the skin surface. On the right side, it was about 2.5 cc's, and on the left, it was about 3 cc's of volume. And that is effectively all the information that you get before you have to come up with the final diagnosis. So if you're playing along at home, pause and see if you can come up with a diagnosis based on this imaging. And Dr. Baraki, I'll turn it over to you. What do you think's going on with this patient?
Yeah, cool. I think an ultrasound was a reasonable choice in this situation for a few reasons. One is that it can spare the patient radiation. And the other is that since none of our other evaluations so far revealed much evidence of inflammation, then it is a I would say ever so slightly less likely that there's something going on in the abdomen with a ton of inflammation that would light up with contrast. Now, I think if her white count, she came in, had been, you know, 18,000 or something, I think that the CT would have been the correct choice. But in this situation, starting with an ultrasound, especially with the history and what I was suspecting, because I did mention this diagnosis at the very beginning of this case, I think that that was actually a pretty reasonable choice. So hypoechoic regions on an ultrasound typically are going to represent some sort of fluid. And so we have, the interesting thing here is we have two regions on either side of the belly button in both rectus muscles. So it seems like we have these kind of bilateral or almost symmetric fluid collections in the rectus muscles. And as I mentioned at the outset, one of the things that you can have in the abdominal wall is called a rectus sheath hematoma. And so it is most likely that this represent little collections of blood in those abdominal muscles. There's not too many other things that can kind of develop in terms of fluid there. When you think about fluid accumulations, it could just be like bland, sterile, you know, what we call a transudative type fluid. There's not really a good mechanism for fluid to end up there that looks like that. Other types of fluid would be like pus if you have an abscess. There's also not a good way that that ends up there unless you, I don't know, inject your abdominal wall in a non-sterile manner or something like that. But that wouldn't usually present this quickly and immediately after exercise. So I think that the sit-ups, the strain, the exercise, just bad luck in this patient because she doesn't seemingly have any other kind of bleeding predisposition or bleeding tendency and there was no trauma. But I suspect that these represent bilateral rectus sheath hematomas in the abdominal wall.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. Tell Dr. Baraki what he's won. This is a rectus sheath hematoma. She was given oral pain meds and discharged home and told to rest. Pain gradually resolved by 48 hours with complete relief at 1 week, and she was able to return to her normal activities. Rectus sheath hematoma. I don't know how interesting this was to you, but yeah. I mean, when I read the case, I was like, this is something that could happen. And the reason why I wanted to bring it up is not be to worry people like, hey, look, if you do sit-ups, you can get a rectus sheath hematoma. Right. But more so that like there are certain populations where this could be potentially worrisome and it needs to be in the back of your mind. And we'll talk about that. So let's go over some clinical pearls here. Rectus sheath hematoma, as it sounds, is effectively a collection of blood between the rectus abdominis muscles and the overlying epimysium or sheath that covers the muscle. Typically comes from a rupture of either the superior or the inferior epigastric arteries or one of their branches, and basically you get a collection of blood. The superior epigastric artery, epigastric referring to like the area around the stomach, that comes from the subclavian artery, and the inferior epigastric artery comes off the external iliac. That's a little anatomy lesson for people listening at home. This is typically a mechanical cause that causes, again, bleeding into the space between the muscle and the overlying envelope, this muscle sheath. They tend to be larger when below the arcuate line. Basically, that's an anatomical landmark where the posterior sort of covering of the rectus muscle goes from multiple layers down to a single layer. And so you can get larger collections of blood that kind of dissect or expand into what we call the retroperitoneal space. That's the space behind the peritoneum that keeps most of your intra-abdominal organs in there. So this arcuate line is below the belly button, and this tends to be, again, potentially larger. Now, the reason why I wanted to bring this up is because older individuals, particularly those who are on anticoagulation therapy for a whatever reason, and if they are sick, for example, or have recently been sick, or they have asthma, they're coughing, anything like that, that tends to be like the number one risk factor is effectively someone's on anticoagulation, so they're more prone to bleed anyway. They have some sort of condition that causes them to strain repeatedly, like a cough, asthma exacerbation, or whatever, plus or minus some physical activity. And so if you work with these patients and they say, oh man, I'm real sore in my abdomen afterwards, it doesn't mean it's a medical emergency, but rather than thinking like, oh, is this overexertion in the gym? Is this rhabdo? Is this whatever? This, you know, might be something to keep in the back of your brain.
Yeah, this is a straightforward case. It's interesting regardless because it provides some useful teaching points around abdominal pain and differentiating abdominal wall pathology from intra-abdominal pathology. There are some physical exam things that are sometimes taught to medical students to help to differentiate this kind of thing. Certainly something that we see from time to time. By and large, it tends to be benign and self-resolving. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, to your point, it's somebody who's on blood thinners and either has some direct trauma to the abdominal wall or that kind of recurrent straining, most often related to chronic cough and things like that, compared with sit-ups being, I would say, a less frequent thing that at least I've observed. But of course, those patients, people who are doing sit-ups routinely, are less likely to get hospitalized for all reasons anyway. So yeah, good straightforward case and some decent learning points out of it, I think.
A couple other interesting case reports I found that had caused a rectus sheath hematoma that may be interesting to our listeners. One was in a person who was injecting research chemicals. They were trying to inject them subcutaneously, so just under the skin, and they may have injected them a little bit too deep or incorrectly, and so they get pockets of fluid in this case, and it can cause bleeding and irritation. Also caused a rectus sheath hematoma. There was a thought that maybe using a belt, during lifting, might mechanically exacerbate the risk here. Although most of the time, there's not actually much movement of the abdominal cavity with a belt. That's kind of the idea: keep your trunk stable. So there's not a lot of crunching, like flexion and extension there. But that was reported as a potential risk. I don't know how I feel about that. More interestingly, was a case where somebody was wearing a waist trainer while they were doing a workout, and they were doing sit-ups and whatnot. And so perhaps that, like, there's like a compressive element here. So I don't waist trainers don't work. Just to be clear, like they just don't. But the potential risk maybe of an uncomfortable sort of, you know, hematoma that should, to your point, self-resolve. But I thought that was interesting that all those three things could potentially cause a rectus sheath hematoma.
Yeah, ultimately, this hematoma is just a fancy doctor word for essentially like a bruise, or when people describe like a blood blister that can show up on certain areas of their body, like the digits and things like that. It's essentially the same thing. And so I would get concerned about something like this if it develops in a patient who is on those kinds of blood thinners, because then you get concerned about, well, how likely is this to stop on its own? How am I going to need to change their management with respect to their blood thinners, if at all? Do I need to hold it for a period of time? When can I resume it? All those kind of considerations. And how large is it getting? But that's rarely a consideration in somebody who is not on blood thinners or doesn't have some kind of a bleeding disorder. So by and large, this is just a benign self-resolving thing. Pretty uncomfortable, as it was in this case, but unfortunately uncommon. So, you know, you don't need to be concerned about doing your trunk work or your sit-ups or your leg raises or whatever other, you know, trunk training of choice you prefer. Even if I was on a blood thinner like a Apixaban or something like that, I would not view that as a reason to not train my trunk, because this can just happen. It's bad luck. It's uncommon and it's self-resolving anyway. So yeah, that's my take.
Yeah, that's the summary. Yeah, so you can get some sort of bruise in the abdominal wall from working out. It is relatively rare. It does tend to be self-limiting, but if you have a patient who's like a little old lady on a some sort of blood thinner, and maybe has been sick recently with cough or asthma exacerbation, this is something that may be in the back of your mind. But that is a wrap here on the March 2025 Mystery Case on the Barbell Medicine Podcast. Before you guys go anywhere, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. It really helps drive traffic to our podcast so we can keep bringing you all the latest nuance in health and fitness. From everyone here at Barbell Medicine, I'm Dr. Jordan Feigenbaum. We'll catch you next week and every week right here on the Barbell Medicine Podcast.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.